this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it is going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls, because we have with us Christina Borgensen. And Christina was an award-winning producer for CBS television, and she'd worked on all sorts of projects and been nominated for Emmys. And did you ever get an Emmy, Christina?
Yes, I did. I received an Emmy for investigative reporting, doing an updated documentary on Edward R. Murrow's famous Harvest of Shame.
All right. Well, of course, Christina then, graduated from the Columbia School of Journalism, and she was a typical establishment journalist I'm going to let her tell the story. Why don't you explain how you fell into disfavor and you suddenly began to realize that things were not as you'd been taught at Columbia.
Things were not as they seemed. I was assigned by my executive producer, Linda Mason, to look into the TWA 800 disaster. And I started working with Paul Raganese, who was CBS's law enforcement consultant at the time, and he was a former bomb squad, NYPD bomb squad guy, who had a lot of friends among all the NYPD divers working with the military to recover the debris. And he also had a secret meeting with a couple of the FBI task force chief, Jim Kallstrom's the FBI task force under Kallstrom. And they all said that it looked like something hit that plane.
Now, they didn't actually say it. They would just sort of nod yes or no without...
Well, in the secret meeting, right. Because they told him that they were being polygraphed every week, which when I called, the FBI's spokesperson, Balakette, and asked him about that. I didn't say why I'd asked him about it, but I asked him about it, and he said absolutely not. He denied that.
He denied that they were being polygraphed, whereas the truth of the matter, they were polygraphing the FBI agents to make sure they didn't tell the truth?
Well, to make sure they weren't leaking information, I would suspect, if indeed that was true. I'm just telling you what the agents told Paul Raganese.
Right.
They,
so
could not talk directly to him. So, Paul and I were starting to wonder, we're starting to dig more deeply. I mean, the NYPD divers were talking about how their dives were very, very, they were prescribed. I mean, they could only dive in precise locations that were mapped out for them, and they couldn't go to the left or to the right of that. They found the whole thing highly controlled. And they were not allowed for 2 days when the diving began. The first 2 days, no NYPD divers were allowed to go in, only the military divers.
In other words, you had a feeling that they were concealing something from the NYPD divers.
That was the impression that the divers had. But trouble came to me in the form of Mr. James Sanders, who was a former investigative policeman who had become a journalist, who started looking into it and did what no other journalist in America had managed to do, which was he penetrated the investigation, the National Transportation Safety Board investigation, inside the hangar. And this senior investigator started smuggling out documents to him because he smelled something fishy going on in there. And one of the documents, and Sanders started sending the documents to me because obviously at CBS I had a bigger audience. Well, I couldn't get anybody at CBS to even pay attention to this stuff.
And of course, how many people died in that plane?
230 people.
230 people are dead, and nobody seems to want to get to the real story, which everything seems to be pointing at this time that there was some sort of a missile.
Well, at that time, not really. I mean, there was questions that were arising, but I was actually also at that time sent to Washington to talk to CBS's big Washington correspondent, Bob Orr, And he basically told me all his top sources in the government, you know, particularly in the military, had told him that this was mechanical. So that's what he was going with. And I told him that people on the ground involved in the investigation were telling us, Paul and me, other things. But I didn't go any further than that with it. So anyway, and among the documents that I received, by the way, from Sanders was the debris field, a map of the debris field, that showed, I think, pretty conclusively that the initiating event did not occur in the center wing fuel tank, as the investigators have stated all along, because that was not the first thing. The first thing to fall off the plane is usually the first thing impacted, and it didn't come from inside the center wing fuel tank. So anyway, I really got into trouble when Sanders sent me a piece of seat foam that the National Transportation Safety Board investigator had smuggled out to him to have tested. He had it tested and said it was covered with solid rocket missile fuel. And by the way, the investigator was telling him that this stuff was sprayed across several rows of seats. And so he asked me if I would test it. I asked 60 Minutes if, you know, I could get their permission to accept it. They said yes. And later, you know, the senior producer who gave me permission tried to deny that. But anyway, I got it and put it in the senior producer's desk for safekeeping while I found a lab. Literally 2 days later, the FBI came to CBS, and without so much as a peep, CBS just handed it right back.
In other words, this was the strip of the foam from one of the seats, and hadn't Sanders actually had this tested, and it looked like it was rocket fuel?
Well, yeah, he said he had an elemental analysis done, and then he had some experts look at it. And one of the experts was a missile guy who said, indeed, the breakdown of elements and the percentages in which they appeared were consistent with solid rocket missile fuel.
Well, of course, Mr. Kallstrom insisted that it was just the adhesive that was...
Well, on national TV, Mr. Kallstrom told Dan Rather that, no, this was adhesive. And later on, the information was released from the government that it was 3M adhesive, this green glue. And so Tom Stalka, a physicist who got involved in this...
And I'm going to have to interrupt you there because I want people to know what Tom found. But right now, of course, I have to do a little business to stay
okay on
the air. So right now I want to mention to our listeners that Radio Liberty is supported by the people who listen. And of course, one of the things you can do is to change your long-distance carrier over to Promise Vision. And, of course, rates are very, very competitive with the other mainline carriers. You'll find that when you call them, you get a real live human being. And if you don't believe there's problems, try calling AT&T or try calling MCI and just try to get a real live human being. Well, anyway, if you give them a call, why, you'll find that the real live human beings answer the telephone at Promise Vision. And, of course, call 866-448-5631. That's 866-448-5631. And you will get very competitive rates, and 15% of whatever you spend on your long-distance calls will revert to us. Just be sure when you call to mention that you heard about a Promise Vision here at Radio Liberty. And then, of course, we want to mention that we carry the Phonopoly sets. And Phonopoly is a game. It's played like Monopoly, but it teaches children how to read phonetically, how to pronounce words phonetically, but more important, how to spell phonetically. And, of course, it's not one game. It's actually 5 board games plus 2 bonus games, and we throw in a couple of books as well. And in about 20 hours, you can undo the harm that the public schools have done with their method of teaching reading, which has resulted in some of the lowest SAT scores in the entire world right here in the United States. Now, you couldn't have done this bad a job unintentionally. It's been done intentionally. There are people who have a different world vision, and they control the government schools. But you can circumvent that and undo the harm in about 20 hours. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for a Phonopoly set. You won't be sorry you did.
The Anglo-American establishment that gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, Dr. Stanback here. Our guest is Christina Bordensen, and of course she's telling her story. Top-notch producer, Emmy-winning producer, television producer for CBS, and of course she's met Jim Sanders. He's given her some of the foam. And instead, of course, allowing this to be checked to determine whether or not there was residual of the rocket fuel on that strip, why CBS turns it back over to the FBI. And, of course, the FBI seems to be intent upon not getting to the bottom of what's really going on. So why don't you pick up the story from there? Wasn't there this friend of yours, Tom, had actually began to analyze this material?
Yeah, well, what happened was, once the foam was returned to the government investigators, 3 weeks later I was out of CBS. But meanwhile, Tom Stalka was testing the 3M glue, did an elemental analysis, and sure enough, it was completely different from what Sanders had tested. So in this news report where Sanders had, told Dan Rather no, that it was adhesive, I mean, he looked at Dan Rather straight in the eye, and the American public, too, I might add, and just lied to them. And the thing that really bothered me, though, was that Dan never asked a follow-up question and, never said, well, how do you know that's what it is? What kind of testing did you do? Not one follow-up question, which is typical. Whenever a, quote, legitimate news source, someone with a big title from a federal institution or a big title from a corporate institution wants to lie to the American public about something very sensitive, they can do it, no questions asked.
Now, Jim Kallstrom is the head of the FBI and investigating this, is that it?
He was the head of the FBI task force in charge of investigating TWA 800.
Okay.
And by the way, after Paul Raganese left CBS as CBS's law enforcement consultant, guess who became CBS's law enforcement consultant?
That's Jim Kallstrom.
Yes. So that was a little strange. But anyway, so I thought, okay, this is the end of the story. But no, ABC then hired me to do a smaller segment on TWA 800. And the segment that I was going to do was to look at the anomalies within the investigation. I really wasn't going to delve into the missile theory per se. I was going to look at the evidence. I was going to look at, where the government was being honest and where it wasn't, and do a piece on that. Well, I was working with Kelly O'Meara, who was the former chief of staff of Congressman Forbes, who had become a journalist because she lost her job over this TWA 800 investigation for Congressman Forbes. And so we were in Long Island and in New York City getting ready, setting up this big shoot. And our car, we had in the trunk of our car, she had golf clubs and we had a camera, we had our computer, and we had all our documents pertaining to TWA 800, our investigation. And lo and behold, our car was broken into, but the lock didn't even look tampered with, and all that was taken were our documents and our computer.
In other words, somebody knew how to get into the trunk, and they were pretty interested in expensive items. They wanted to know what you knew.
Right. It was a professional job. And I'll tell you, I think it was the strangest moment of my entire experience with this. You just, This is the United States of America.
Well, didn't you say that your phone seemed to sort of acting very strange?
Yeah, the phone was acting funny, but, you know, with that, you never know. And so you can't, you know, I hate to go any further than that with the phone thing, but I'll tell you, the trunk robbery really frightened me on a whole new level, you know? And it, you know, kind of shifts your paradigm a little bit, you know, because you don't think these things happen in the U.S.
So somebody, you don't know who it is, but somebody wants to know what you're doing, and I think obviously they want you to know that they know what you're doing.
Yeah, well, somebody wanted to know what we knew, I think. So anyway, we were moving along with this, you know, setting up this shoot. It was going to be a huge eyewitness shoot. We were going to have over 30 eyewitnesses in one room talking about what they knew. We wanted the American public to see their faces and hear their voices all together as a huge group.
Now, there's well over 100 people who had actually seen the missile go up, weren't they?
Yeah, but you know what? There are a lot of people who are afraid to talk to the press because they've been talked to.
By government agents. What did the government agents tell them, that you didn't see what you think you saw?
Well, they told them a variety of things. That is among them.
What else did they tell them? That
they shouldn't talk. They shouldn't talk to the press.
Wait a minute now. You mean the government agents are telling Americans that they shouldn't talk to the press?
Sure. Oh, sure. I mean, there was if you go to Long Island, if you go to the Meritxes area in Long Island and talk to the people there, I mean, you're talking to a town that is still traumatized by what they experienced after TWA, you know, crashed off the coast of their little piece of land there.
Was there a sort of a veiled threat from the government agents?
These agents were all over the place, and you know, they when they interviewed them, when they tried to a lot some people when they tried to go and get the agents to take their statements, they would find later on that their statements were twisted around.
In other words,
they would distort their statements.
Why, my goodness.
Oh yeah, I mean all kinds of things. I mean those two guys, Brumley and Wire, who were the FBI said they had used them, their testimony. Their depositions to make the CIA video.
Now, that was that animated video that was shown all across America to tell us what really happened, and of course, it was all a lie.
Well, and Brumley and Wire said, that's not what we saw, you know, because the CIA was trying to get everybody to believe that what they said they saw going up was actually fuel dripping out of the crippled craft after it had exploded. I mean, it was just... You know, the whole thing was just very, very, I think, very surreal for the people at Meritxes.
well, and for
the rest of us who were involved in it, too.
Okay, fine. Well, but there were well over 100 witnesses, weren't there?
Over 700 witnesses who saw the incident at various times that it was occurring.
Okay.
Okay? And there were about 100... Oh, I can't remember the exact, well over 100 witnesses who saw the incident at around the same time when they were seeing something go up and then stop and then an explosion. Okay? And so there are well over 100 witnesses who saw it at the same time, at the same stage, who say the same thing. Okay, and some of them, this woman, Linda Perry, has a story to tell, and she's a witness. I mean, she saw the whole thing from beginning to end, and, you know, it's caused her all kinds of trauma, you know, like all kinds of psychological trauma to have witnessed something like that. And, of course, you know, she spoke to the feds, too, and, you know, the feds, whenever they interviewed people, they would make sure that they did not say the word missile. They would tell you before they interviewed you, do not use the word missile.
Why not?
Well, exactly. I mean, why are you telling the eyewitnesses what to say? And, you know, the other interesting thing about the feds, too, is that they don't record their interviews. They just, they use, you know, a pad and a pen. So, and that's very convenient because when you record an interview, you can transcribe it and you have the precise words You know, and you also have the inflection, the tone, everything to review, you know, for veracity, et cetera. But, you know, they never do that.
No,
they
in fact, if, that. That way nobody could ever say that they didn't put down what you said. It's your word against theirs. But we find this over and over and over again, that the FBI will twist what people say to follow the party line. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, when it's a very, very sensitive case, I mean, there are a lot of cases, of course, I think the FBI does a great job, you know, routine stuff and no problems. But when it's a high-profile case like this, when it's something that is very, very sensitive going on, and, you know, I mean, there was a military operation going on out there that night, you know, it's a whole different thing. Then it's okay to lie. And lie they do. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But, you know, I mean, our politicians do it. Our presidents lie to us. Anybody in a tight spot, whether he's an elected government official or a corporate chieftain or whatever, when they're in trouble, they'll lie. No, you know, no problem. And the problem is because they're, quote, a legitimate news source to journalists because they have power, they can lie and the journalists won't ask them, you know, any questions or won't, and I, you know, you heard what Dan Rather told the Guardian newspaper, didn't you, about why mainstream media wasn't asking questions about 911 and where the CIA and FBI were before 911?
What did he say?
You know what he said? He said, well, you have to understand that we were being necklaced, in a sense, by the administration, because basically we were being told that it was unpatriotic to ask questions. I mean, this whole country is based on people standing up and doing the right thing, isn't it?
It used to be. Well, anyway, we're going to have to take another quick break here. And,
okay.
And this is the time when I want to mention that Radio Liberty sells something called Miracle 2 soap products, and I don't necessarily like the name of them, but I will tell you we've been very, very happy with them. We make no claims for them, but many of our listeners and many people have used them are very, very happy with them. We use them in our own home. The one thing I will guarantee is that they are excellent as far as cleaning is concerned, and I certainly have used the moisturizing soap for well over a year now, and very, very pleased with it. If you'd like more information, if you'd like to get a free brochure and an audio tape, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And ask for the Miracle 2 soap pamphlet, or if you'd like to order an introductory set, why call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we want to mention that Radio Liberty has a unique opportunity to begin syndicating a new program we'll be doing on Fridays. You know, I already do 5 hours a day and then 2 hours on weekends. But, of course, we have been asked to do a program that would be syndicated starting up in the Northwest on the American Christian Network and then hopefully across the nation. But quite frankly, we need your financial support if we're going to be able to do that. And if any of you feel you're in a position to make a pledge for so much a month for the next 6 months, and that's what we ask specifically is a six-month pledge, whatever sum of money you could give over that period of time will be very much appreciated, because we need to get to the American people with stories like this. There's so much information that needs to be gotten out, and you're not going to get it from Dan Rather, because, of course, he wouldn't want to be unpatriotic. Well, I think patriotism is not loyalty to a group of men. It's loyalty to our Constitution and the concepts of freedom. And if we are to survive, why, the people must know the truth.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with TWA 800 that went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that will give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Well, you can tell how long ago we cut that cart. Why, of course, it says TWA went down about a year ago, and of course it was in, 1996 it went down,
wasn't
it?
That's correct.
Yeah. All right, fine. Well, let's go ahead with your story. So basically now, of course, you're going to be producing this program for American Broadcasting Company.
Right.
And isn't Oliver Stone going to host it?
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because Oliver Stone, all the producers on this, it was going to be a hardcore, it's called Declassified, it was going to be a hardcore investigative series. And it was going to, basically, it was going to compete with 60 Minutes. And, but it was interesting because it was on the entertainment side. And Oliver Stone, for his star appeal, was going to be the host. But he really didn't have anything to do with the content in terms of producing the content. He didn't have any say over what, you know, I was going to do with my story, what anybody else was going to do with their story. So anyway, all of a sudden, something appeared in Newsweek, a little blurb in the Periscope section talking about ABC's spokeswoman, Eileen Murphy, saying the conspiracy crank Oliver Stone was going to be doing something on TWA 800 and that the news division wanted to be certain that everybody knew that they weren't involved in this and that they had responsibly reported that it was mechanical failure. And the minute I saw that, I called the executive producer and I said, you know, this is so strange. I think I've found my first planted piece. I've discovered a planted piece in Newsweek. I said, you know what, I'll bet you in a few weeks that there's going to be a flurry of press activity on this. I said, did anybody call over there and ask us what we were doing on TWA 800? And my executive producer said, no. And Oliver Stone said nobody called him. And I, the producer, certainly didn't get any calls from anybody at Newsweek. So sure enough, a few weeks later, Newsweek, Time, The Post, all these newspapers started talking about how ABC News was all upset, conspiracy crank Oliver Stone, same story. And then all of a sudden, Declassified, a series that had been in the works for over 6 months, was canceled in 3 days because of this 1 8-minute segment that I was working on about TWA 800. So that should give you an idea of how big a problem this is for the powers that be in the government.
Now, of course, initially they denied that there were any Navy ships in the area, 130 miles away. And then finally, when the radar comes out, this place is crawling with Navy ships, isn't it?
Exactly. And, you know, that's a very interesting thing because Kelly O'Meara discovered that when, you know, there was the radar data was released ostensibly in the public hearing, the first public hearing on TWA 800, where, by the way, the eyewitnesses, nobody was allowed to discuss the eyewitnesses. The reporters were barred from even asking questions about the eyewitnesses. No information about the eyewitnesses were allowed at that hearing, which should, you know, raise a big red flag in everybody's mind, certainly every journalist's mind. But anyway, what happened was a couple years later, Kelly, now working for the Washington Times, receives a CD with the radar information, only this time it's all the radar information.
In other words, they deleted part of it because they didn't want you to see the whole story.
Exactly. If the entire radar information is a circle, what you actually saw, what was presented in the first hearing, was half of that information, the top half. Why? Because the bottom half showed a series of vessels heading straight for this activated military warning zone, okay, where when a warning zone is activated, only military craft are allowed in there, okay, and a bunch of them are heading in there. And so Kelly, you know, calls up Peter Goldes of the NTSB to interview him, and right after she interviews him about this radar information, he calls up Howard Kurtz of the Washington Post. And the next thing Kelly knows, before her article is even written, there is an op-ed piece in the Washington Post saying, oh yes, this very aggressive reporter from the Washington Times was questioning Peter Goals about TWA radar information, and then he proceeds to try and basically discredit Kelly as a journalist.
In other words, rather than addressing the fact that they had concealed the radar information, they're going to demonize the messenger.
Exactly, but the extraordinary thing about it is Howard Kurtz is a highly, highly regarded journalist. Okay, he's a highly regarded journalist, and you tell me when an aggressive reporter is a story. I mean, is it a story to say that a reporter is aggressive? No. I mean, it was obviously, again, speaking of planted pieces, Peter Goals calls him up, and he heads right for his computer and writes up an op-ed piece to try and blow away Kelly and her information before it even hits, you know, before it even sees the light of day. And that's another problem, you know, which is how journalists, even top journalists, you know, are willing to discredit themselves, to discredit their colleagues on behalf of, you know, some flack that they're friendly with, you know, which is not the role of a journalist. I mean, journalists, I think a great journalist really doesn't have any friends anywhere. You know, I mean, you really have to be the one out there who's not taking sides, period.
Like Seymour Hersh, huh?
Well, the thing about Seymour Hersh is he does know how to dig out the information. You know, that's for sure. But you know, I mean, I'm not even saying that there is such a thing as 100% objectivity. But you know, there are within a certain limit. You know, there is bottom line truth. You know, there are facts. You know what I'm saying?
Well, when you've got over 100 witnesses who saw the missiles going up, and they refused to allow any of them to testify.
Well, there are more than 100 witnesses who saw something going up. There are way more than 100 who saw something go up. But the ones that who are key are the ones who saw something go up and saw the explosion.
Right.
You know? And there are well over 100 of those.
Yeah, and of course, let's talk a little bit about that CIA animation. Now, first of all, what's the CIA doing involved? CIA is supposed to be doing things overseas.
Well,
but suddenly the CIA gets this animation on. It's on literally every television station in America. And it shows this explosion of the central wing tank, and then the front of the plane falls off, and then the plane climbs up in the air. Plane climbs in the air after the front end's fallen off.
Yeah, if you're a physicist, that's a, you know.
And then, of course, it plunges into, and of course, this has nothing to do with anything other than it is to implant in your mind, because you saw the picture and you think that's what really happened, and it wasn't what happened. It was, they were trying to explain a lot of things with that because they did not want the American people to know the truth. So why don't you pick up that story, because it's fascinating.
Well, you know, that's the thing is, I've always wondered, like, how many people just in the general public, you know, said to themselves, the CIA? Why did they go to the CIA? Now, the FBI told the public the reason why they went to the CIA was because they didn't have the facilities, and the CIA did, to create such an animation. Now, what I find interesting about that is, you know, why go to the CIA? There are plenty of fabulous animators all over the country, I mean, who are probably actually better at it than the CIA, because that's all they do, okay? And secondly, what they did was, instead of using, you know, sort of a triangulation method and using, you know, more than, you know, a good number of sample eyewitnesses, they chose two, okay? Mike Weyer and Dwight Brumley, which is, okay, fine, let's just go with them, okay? So they do this animation, and what the animation shows is the center wing fuel tank exploding, and then all of a sudden the plane pitches up, which is physically impossible. And then all of a sudden this fuel leaking down in a straight line, which is, again, with a plane moving that fast, how possible is that too? You know, like a fuel leaking in a straight line. So anyway, when Mike Weyer and Dwight Brumley saw that animation, they said, absolutely not, that is not what we saw. There's no way that we saw that.
But the CIA said that that's what they saw.
Well, exactly, and that's the other thing. I mean, the feeling of powerlessness that people have when particularly these eyewitnesses, they went in good faith, you know, to their federal law enforcement officers, you know. They went in droves to them to try and tell their story. Sometimes they would call them two and three times. They were so haunted by what they saw, call two or three times to, you know, to give, to talk to them, you know, because they really, really wanted to help them get to the bottom of this, only to eventually realize that, you know, the FBI did not want to really hear from them anymore after a certain point. And, you know, when some of them found out that, well, certainly Wire and Brumley found out in a big way that their depositions were distorted, it was like going through the looking glass, you know. It was like living in Alice in Wonderland or something. And that's the problem, is the general public, people who have not experienced this kind of thing, are just like, well, I don't believe that.
But it just couldn't happen in America, right? You know, that they would have plant articles, that they would search people's trunk, that people would be fired for trying to find the truth.
Exactly, and that is why Into the Buzzsaw has 18 examples of that. It's because I don't want people to think it's just Christina and her story. You know, one disgruntled journalist or however, I mean, there are all kinds of ways to marginalize one person who stands up and tries to tell the truth. But when you have 18 award-winning journalists and authors doing it, it's a lot harder to ignore.
Now, that's Gary Webb, and there's April Oliver and the Operation Tailwind, and Monica Jensen Stevenson on her Kiss the Boys Goodbye.
Right.
Really, it's a fascinating book. Let me put a plug in for it, mainly because we're going to be carrying it, and because Christina wrote it. It's called Into the Buzzsaw, and it's how many essays?
There are 18 essays altogether.
All right, and they're just people telling the things that happened to them when they tried to get the truth out, you know, by writing books or by writing articles, and the things that happen to you when you try to tell the truth. That's what happened to April Oliver, who was an excellent producer. Who did she work for? Was that CBS?
She worked for CNN.
All right, fine. Well,
and you know, Monica Jensen Stevenson has. Do your listeners know about her story about Barbie Garwood, the POW?
Oh yeah, sure. We actually have a 4-tape set on Barbie Garwood.
Oh, okay. So they know. You know, I mean. Here's a woman, and this is the thing about some of these journalists who are really, really extraordinary. I mean, I'm nothing compared to some of these other people. Monica Jensen Stevenson has spent almost 2 decades trying to get justice for this guy. Do you know what that's like to live with a story for 2 decades because you feel so strongly about, you know, the justice that needs to be arrived at? You know, I mean, that's really an extraordinary person.
It really is, and she's a lovely, lovely person. We're going to have to interrupt you here again, Christina.
Okay.
And this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope that many of you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get the 4 best tapes. You'll get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, of course, you'll be helping us do what we do, and we hope that many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family. You tell others about our program, go to our website at radioliberty.com, or we hope, of course, that many of you will want to join us in this effort to actually begin syndicating some of our programs, and the first one we wanted to syndicate is the new Saturday program, Saturday morning, and hopefully we can get this put out across America. It'll be up on the satellite, and we're going to have some very professional help getting that information out. Because, you see, there is no way that people can maintain their freedom if they don't have the facts, if they don't have the truth, if they don't understand the foundations of our freedom, the difference between a republic and a democracy, and why America was a unique and novel nation. And then, of course, how we got to where we are today. So remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-544-8927. And we do hope that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And then, as long as we're talking about Monica Jensen Stevenson and Bobby Garwood, we have 2 4-tape sets. One of them is called One Man Came Back. It's the story of Bobby Garwood and, of course, the interviews with various people who were involved in his strange story. And then, of course, we have another one based upon Monica Jensen Stevenson's book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye. It's called The Men We Left Behind, interviews with Monica in both of these tape sets, but they're two of the most powerful four tape sets we've ever put together. The Men We Left Behind, what really happened to the boys who were abandoned at the Second World War and in Korea and in Vietnam, and then one man came back. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Our four tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out. And if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Christina Borgensen, her book, Into the Buzzsaw, and you can get it by calling us at 1-800-5-448-9-27. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And I've read several of the essays. Of course, I read Christina's and several of the others. And I will tell you, it's a fascinating book. And by the time I get back from my upcoming vacation, I will have all of them read. Well, now, Christina, you know, there was so much more in that radar information that not only showed that here were all these ships there, and then what happened after the attack? Didn't these ships sort of just get away from there as fast as they could after the TW-800 had been hit?
Well, that was the thing, is that, you know, maritime law clearly states that in the instance of a disaster, all ships in the area must go to help, okay? And what was striking about particularly this one vessel, which at one point Kallstrom tried to tell Reed Irvine of AIM, but, you know, Reed Irvine has also, and AIM have also spent a lot of time and effort digging into this story. And Reed has done some dynamite work and had some really very interesting conversations with people. And one of them was Mr. Kallstrom, who tried to tell him that at first that it was a helicopter. And anyway, but this vessel, which is now dubbed, has now been dubbed the 30-knot track, was literally almost under the plane when the plane blew up. And the minute that plane blew up, the 30-knot track, as you know, which is of course a reference to how fast it was moving out of the area, you know, turns around and starts, you know, running in the other direction. Now, Kallstrom, the FBI's Kallstrom, had told the American public that no stone. This is one of their favorite lines. No stone has been left unturned. Every vessel has been identified, and well, lo and behold. Finally, he admits that the 30-knot track has not been identified, and it is the only vessel that has not been identified. And it still, to this day, has not been identified.
And, of course, the other thing, wasn't there definite evidence of a missile coming up and going through the wing and or going through the fuselage, and then you could see it trajecting above?
Well, the person who's the real expert on that at this point is Mr. Sanders. He and Jack Cashel, you know, did this wonderful documentary called Silence, and I think they're working on a book that's going to be pretty, if you'll excuse the pun, explosive.
Yes.
But yes, it appears that you know, I mean, he really has worked very long and hard on that evidence. I mean, all I was able to do, and as I say, you know, I happen to have been in the position of power in terms of being at major media outlets when I started trying to look into this, you know. So this is why, you know, my story is not as comprehensive in terms of what I uncovered, because, you know, it was investigation interrupted in my case. But you know, what I was and have been able to document with no problem, as I'm sure you read in my essay, was this pattern of government deception and lying about key evidence. Now, Sanders, because he actually had to go to trial, got photographs, and he got to visit the inside Calverton, and he's done an amazing amount of work, an immense amount of work. And again, you know, I mean, there are some average citizens or some journalists, independent journalists, who have done amazing, amazing work on this story, and they really put the top journalists to shame. In many ways, to shame, you know?
Well, Christina, how did you feel when you suddenly realized that there really is no Santa Claus, that things are not as we have been told, that they really you can't get the truth out on certain key stories?
Well, I'll tell you, at first I went through this sort of really depressed phase, okay? But, you know, the bottom line is that I'm an American. I believe in our democracy. I think we have the greatest country on earth. I love this country very much. And, you know, it's my job, just like it's the job of every citizen, to stand up and do the right thing, you know, when something like this occurs. And in my case, I'm a journalist. And so I stood up and I did what I could. And what I could do was put this book together.
And you've done a great, great job with that book, because it's one of the best things that we have right now. If you have friends that really believe the myth that we're getting the truth through the media on most things, get them a copy of this book and just have them read one or two of the chapters. They don't have to read the whole book. I think once they get started, why, it'll be an earth-shattering experience. Right now we've got Fred calling in from Salinas. Hi, Fred. A question or comment?
Yeah, good afternoon. I just wanted to ask her if I think one of the most credible reports that I've seen on that was reported on was the two National Guard pilots that were flying real close to that. And I wonder if you might comment over the air. I'll listen to it over the air.
Okay,
thanks.
It was Fritz Myers and, it's so strange because the other guy's name has escaped. Oh, yeah, and Fritz Myers to this day, I mean, he will go anywhere to any public forum and stand up and tell his story again and again and again and again. I mean, this is a Vietnam veteran. This is a guy who knows what ordnance looks like. This is a guy who was right up there in the air. He saw what happened. He described what happened. It's etched in his memory. And here he too is, you know, here is a guy who's a patriot, who still, you know, even though he's also a lawyer, still serves his country, you know, in the reserves. And he saw this thing, and boy, he was smacked down with the rest of them, you know. So yeah, Fritz Myers, I salute him. I'll tell you, he's tried and tried and tried to get this story out.
Well, let's tell a story about Mr. Cashel, who produced this great video, Silenced. And incidentally, for our listeners, we carry Silenced. You can get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-MORE. This is one of the most professional videos, docudramas I've ever seen. Not really a drama, but it is certainly a documentary. And so Mr. Cashel, of course, is going to be interviewed on CNN, and this is going to break out, and the American people are finally going to get the truth. So what happens? I noticed you laughing.
Oh, God. This is Greta Van Susteren's show. So, you know, on the eve of the anniversary of the TWA's demise, he's called, and he's going to be the other side to Jim Hall, who's the NTSB chairman who presided ostensibly over the investigation, although we know the FBI controlled it. But anyway, he was going to go up against Jim Hall, and he was thrilled. He was thrilled to have this opportunity. Well, when Jim Hall and the NTSB biggies found out that he was going to be on there, they said that they would not go on with him on. So they had to make a decision, and they did, and the decision was to kick Cashel off the show. And so I called the booker and asked the booker, you know, what happened. And the booker said, well, you know, the NTSB chiefs refused to appear with Cashel. And I said, well, you know, why didn't you have just Cashel on? Well, they said the reason why we had Jim Hall on instead of Cashel was because Jim Hall is a, quote, legitimate news source.
I love that term.
And I couldn't believe it. And then to sort of cover, you know, just to feel better about what had happened, this person who shall remain anonymous, this person says to me, well, we've been getting some weird calls about him anyway. You know, and I just thought, oh, God, here we go again. You know, it just never
It never ends. And of course, they will do anything to keep the truth from coming out. And you cannot, there's no way that we can survive as a free society if somebody is controlling what the American people see and hear and read, and ultimately then what the American people think and believe.
Right.
Well, we're just about out of time. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, you know, I just want my listeners, if they do read this book, to know that, I mean, while it might be sort of devastating on one hand, it should inspire them to know that even anybody, no matter who you are, how modest your circumstances, you can stand up and make a difference. You know, if you just start taking a step in the right direction, whether it's a phone call or a letter or just talking to your neighbor and informing your neighbor, you too, you know, can work to make a difference and bring, you know, the truth back and freedom back to this country, you know, freedom of expression.
Amen.
Because we're losing it, and we're losing it fast.
We sure are. Well, look, thank you so very much, Christina, and I hope
My pleasure.
Can get you on. As I say, we do 5 hours a day, and you've only done two of our programs, so we've got lots more.
Anytime.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Well, that was Christina Borgens, and a very nice and very courageous, and incidentally, I've seen her pictures, and a very, very beautiful woman who suddenly realized that what we have been saying for so many years, and that is that there is a degree of control over the media in America, and when you try to get the truth out, you get thrown into the buzzsaw. That's the title of her book. It's available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. You can also get our 4-tape set on the TWA shoot down. You can get our basically the update we have with that, and then of course you can get the video silent. So there's all sorts of information to document that. In fact, if you really want to know about how it came down, why we have a book by Joseph Badansky, who is the director of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare, and he simply quotes from the Islamic publications in Europe, who said, we shot it down. We shot down TW-800. So how could they keep that from the American people? Why, you control the media. And why, if we'd got the truth, maybe there wouldn't have been a September 11th. But, of course, the American people were never to know of the Islamic involvement in what happened that day. And there are all sorts of cover stories out there. One day, perhaps, we'll get the truth. In the meantime, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders, for certainly our ministers. We ask you to pray for revival, because if America doesn't turn to God or return to God, why, God will never return to America. I'm going to be gone for a few days, but David Wilson will be with you all next week, and I'll be back after that. And so until we're together again a week from Monday, may the Lord be with you. Thank you.
What's that?